Hi, this is Gavin O'Mara from FE News. I'm here with David Price, OBE. We'll be thinking about the upcoming FE White Paper. David has a great perspective of global educational systems, so we thought it would be great to be able to share some of his views and ideas as to what we could be thinking about for the upcoming FE White Paper. What would you say is a suggestion of what you think? Because you've got such a cool global perspective as to systems that are interesting in the world of education and in the world of work, which the UK government could maybe be thinking about.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the fantastic opportunity that writing the book afforded me was I was able to go around the world, really, and paid for it, so it wasn't like a holiday. But I went to places like Cambodia and Australia, New Zealand, and looked at what I considered be really innovative organisations. Not all education, but an awful lot who were. And what I took from that is that sometimes it's easy for us in, and I keep using the word UK and it's wrong, it's easy for us in England to think that, we're still this dominant force in education. And it's where all the cool stuff's happening. It's not, and I don't think it's been like that for a very long time. One of the interesting conversations I had was with a guy called Grant Lichtman, and he's based in Southern California, and he just had a book out about education policy making, and he described what he called, there's basically three parts to education policy. There's the why, there's the what, and then there's the how. And in his view, certainly America had kind of reached a broad consensus, apart from, as he described it, the small cluster of schools in really deprived inner city urban areas that frankly nobody knew what to do with. But other than those, there was a kind of consensus around why it needed to change. And the what was relatively harmonious as well. That people talked about this concept of deeper learning, do less, go deeper, bring in external people. We use this term now, learning ecosystem, when we probably didn't about 5 years ago. And he said to me, so how is it in the UK? And I said, let's talk about England. I said, we still can't agree on the why. And it's true, we can't. I did a conference once with Pasi Sahlberg, who's the Finnish guy, and he wrote a book called Finnish Lessons. And he's worked a lot with ministers over in this country. And Pasi said, Pasi, what's the difference between, say, the English system and the Finnish system? He said, in Finland, we agreed on what was the purpose of education about 70 years ago. And he said, doesn't matter which government's in charge, we pretty much don't mess with that. He said, it's really about, how we get to this goal. I think we're still in this country saying, is it about meeting employer needs? Or some people will say, is it about preparing citizens to be global citizens? I think we're still having that kind of discussion. And the reason why I say I think we have to stop referring to UK as a system is I think what's going on in Wales right now is really interesting and very forward thinking. So to answer your question, I think what we've got to look at is let's catch up a bit here with in terms of the global debate that's going on. So New Zealand, which I think has got a really fantastic education system and a kind of seamless blend between vocational and academic. They don't even use those terms. But they've been recently doing a massive consultation exercise. They call it the big conversation, where they said to people, what's working, what's not working for you. They talk to parents, they talk to employers. They had a very high profile public. A lot of these conversations were televised. And I just think if this government has kind of run out of ideas, and frankly, I think it has, because I think the path that it's been on for the last 10 years is not giving the return on investment that it should have been doing. So if they're starting to run out of ideas, then I think actually a bit of humility is probably a good thing. And we could start to say, okay, let's talk about what it needs to be. And the coronavirus is an absolutely perfect moment, because it seems to me what we saw with younger kids, at least, is that we had parents who understood what it was like to try to be a teacher. They realized how hard it was, you know? And I've been doing parent engagement workshops, and I do them all around the world, not so much in this country. Tend to do independent schools in this country, because they've seen the way the future's changing. And so to just give you one example, what I often do is I talk to people about, you know, what are the changes in employment? What are the changes in society that we're seeing? You know, the massive, huge changes that we've seen. And then I ask the question, given all of these changes, how could education stay the same as it's been for essentially 140 years? And then we get into talking about what's basically learning theory, and we look at design principles. What if we were trying to rebuild an education system, what should be at the core? What's the kind of the non-negotiables? And this idea that parents aren't really interested just so long as you're looking after the young people, it's nonsense. They were absolutely passionate about it. And this guy came up with me at the end of the one I did in Gurgaon, which is part of New Delhi, and it's the sort of Silicon Valley of New Delhi. This fella came up with me at the end. He said, I totally get what you're talking about. He said, I'm in charge of HR for Google, India. And he said, we cannot get people with the skills that we need now, not from India. He said, we have to look beyond that. He said, because we've got this rigid traditional system where we're still, you know, feeding kids knowledge and then testing them on that. He said, but my problem is I was a beneficiary of that system. I did it really well. And I think that's part of the issue, it seems to me. Part of the resistance for change, funnily enough, actually I think comes from parents. And it's because we as educators have been rubbish at bringing them into a conversation. We're great at insider talk, you know, and we'll use words like pedagogy and words that they can't understand. But we've not been good at involving them. And therefore, they kind of, I think there's not a nuanced conversation. You see it at its most absurd, where parents who would never step foot in a school because they hated that school, and then the school gets threatened with closure, and suddenly they're all up in arms saying, no, you can't close our school, but it caused you 10 years of absolute misery. So there's a lack of kind of, you know, cognitive connection within all that. But the only way we're going to get around that is to have this consultation. And I was involved in a group of people called Whole Education. And just before the coronavirus hit, we'd started this national conversation. We call it the Big Education Conversation, where we were going around the country and you know, having discussions right across the board. So yes, there were teachers. Yes, there were college lecturers, but there were also parents and employers. And it was fantastic. And unfortunately, of course, coronavirus happened and it was no longer possible. But I do think, if we are looking at, you know, the government is committed to a citizens' assembly on climate change. It's committed to a citizens' assembly on, you know, what we do after Brexit. Why not have a citizens' assembly on education? And why not get the discussion going? Because it's happening in other parts of the world.
Yeah, 100%. It leads me on to the thing that government's always been trying to sort of look to try to sort of fix for a long time. I think that the whole reason why apprenticeships are so important to government is around the productivity puzzle, around trying to solve productivity. And yeah, UK's productivity is traditionally very low compared to our competitor nations. Yeah. When you did your research and you did your travels, you obviously come across some amazing organisations that have got, you know, very innovative ways of working and really high productivity. What can we learn from that for both work and education?
Well, the organisation that I saw there was this kind of almost a virtuous circle between high levels of employee engagement, between the innovation in the organization and its productivity. And then I suppose profitability was less important, but they all tended to come as a package. And it's not hard to see why. You know, if you've got maybe 70% of employees who actually don't enjoy their work, well, they're not going to be very productive. So, you know, the great learning that ought to have taken place from the lockdown is that people are actually more productive when they're at home, even though they've got the kids running around and the dogs barking. You know, why is that? Well, maybe it's because we were put in a position where we had to trust them. And I think people are still scratching their heads around how that works. But it seems to me that, so engagement's clearly a big issue. But what I also saw was there are some companies, particularly in the knowledge sector, that are being really agile and adaptable. So there's a company called Sparks and Honey, and it's based in New York, although they've got places all around the US. And 15 years ago, they would have been an advertising agency. That's basically what they did. They're right on Madison Avenue, which is where Mad Men, you know, all those advertising agencies used to be. They describe themselves now as a cultural consultancy. So what does that mean? It means there's that shift that what businesses need to know now isn't so much, do you like this product? Do you want to buy it? It's more, what's bubbling away on social media? What should we be aware of? And they give a beautiful example of esports, because I didn't even know what esports was. And then when they talked about this report that they'd written on esports and how big it had become, and most people, it just crept up on. Well, they were spotting it 5 years ago. And the reason why is they've got this artificial intelligence machine, and it's called Q, and it analyzes data from Twitter, social media, news feeds, TV stations. It analyzes millions and millions of these cultural signals, and it then kind of makes sense of them. It codes them, and they have a way of looking at what's coming up by the speed, by its reach. And if it's significant, then they will commission a report on it, because they know that corporations will pay them very well to know about this. More importantly than that, they'd just done a contract with the US military, because they wanted to know what are the early signs of young people being radicalized, and how do we spot it before it becomes a real issue. So I thought that was a beautiful blend of machine intelligence and human culture. And that's basically what they do. And I think this is going to be the future. It's true that, you know, we are going to lose jobs. The sort of the repetitive task-based jobs, a computer can do that so much better than us. But computers are lousy at being human. And I think that's what we've got to think about now. When we're talking about the growth areas, I mean, ironically, I often get, you know, parents will say to me, you know, have you got any advice? My kid's about to go to university. And I'll say, what's she going to study? And she'll say, law. I say, don't, you know, get her to be a beauty hairdressing therapist. You know, because that's where the work's going to be. The jobs now in the legal profession are disappearing just by the bucket load, because all of that research has now been automated. So I think what we're seeing is this complete inversion, whereby the cognitive and manual, the complex tasks or will always be done by humans. You know, you're never going to get a robot come out to your house because you've got a leak and then work out where that leak was and then fix it. And I think it's a great disservice to this country that we've marginalized the skill that's involved in those professions. And we need to be more like Germany.
Yeah, 100%. No, 100%. David, thank you so much. That's real massive food for thought.
You're welcome, Gavin. We'll do it again.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Why not click subscribe so you can be informed when the latest next individual podcast or podcast mini series from FE News are going to be released.